Welcome to episode 3 of the Art on the Ave podcast series. Today, we're going to be talking about creative entrepreneurs. We have here with us for a roundtable discussion, Jackie Johnson of Bank Lumi, Tom Spouse, CEO of Prospect 33, Kim Sandara, an artist exhibiting with Art on the Ave, and Simone Domizzi, owner of Contessa Rock Hair and fellow art appreciator. We've called all of you here today because you're either a small business owner yourself, you are part of an entrepreneurial organization, or you're part of an organization dedicated to supporting small businesses. Today, we're going to be focusing on a few key areas, those being the balance between being creative and being business-minded, how creatives, artists, and small businesses alike can utilize administrative and financial organizations to expand their business, and what the future of New York looks like for small businesses and creatives. Welcome to all of you, and thank you for being here with me today. Kim, I'm going to turn to you first because you are our resident artist. Would you consider artists small business owners themselves?
I don't think that's where art really starts for when people find the passion for it, but I do think you need to become a business owner to be able to thrive in the type of work that we do.
That's kind of what I was hoping you would say. I've found through Art on the Ave that artists very much come from a creative place, but in order to move forward into that next level of your career, you do have to be kind of business-minded. And so my next question for you is, how do you balance your creative impulses and then your administrative responsibilities?
I think it comes down to scheduling. I know you can't always schedule when you find inspiration to do things, but having a vague kind of like, okay, this afternoon is clear, like, let me see if I can like get into the zone of creating. And if I can't, like, that's okay. I'll just turn to doing more business-oriented things like spreadsheets and numbers and applying to things. So I try to give myself some leeway because it feels too robotic to create art as a business, just manufacturing things basically. Because there is also a difference between making art and being a maker of more crafty or non-fine art objects, which is also very valid. Yeah, I think it comes down to scheduling and making sure that you have a lot of to-do lists and planners and reminders on your phone.
You're pretty good at that as far as artists that I've encountered.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I get that compliment a lot and I really like work at it. So I really appreciate it.
Well, it's great. You are. You're very responsive. You're very communicative and you do fine art and you balance that with other things as well, right? You create a comic book.
Yeah, my life is chaos and I like it that way because it's more interesting to me than doing one thing. So I work on abstract expressionist music paintings. That is one type of work. And then I'm also an illustrator. I work on this graphic novel called Origins of Kin King, which is about my coming out story and the imagined world that I used as a kid and all the way through my adolescence to cope with being alone in the closet for so long. So that's one thing. It's all rooted in wanting to help other nonprofits in their causes. So a project I'm working on right now is called the 270 Million Project. It is a series of small 9x12-inch paintings that create a map that's kind of abstract. All of the pieces are black and white. They're all inspired by Lao music, which is the country of my parents' origin. And kind of recently, in my 20s, I found out that it has a pretty dark history that a lot of Americans don't know about because the government made it that way. But there was a secret war there where there was a bombing campaign, and it turned Laos into the most bombed country per capita in human history. And it was also the first testing ground for the bombings that would happen to other countries after. So I feel like without knowing or being super aware of this history as a collective, we're only going to continue to see the same mistakes made over and over again with other countries. That's kind of my goal with the 270 million project, to create all these paintings, to make them a somewhat more approachable price for like a beginner art collector. The ideal way it's installed, it's only been installed once because the pandemic has pushed a lot of exhibitions back for me and a lot of artists, I'm sure. It's supposed to be installed in a way where it looks like a map and people can purchase a painting and put a block in that map, basically, like it becomes a black square. One day I hope that all of the paintings become a black square and it's just the history that we talk about, because as it moves and grows and changes exhibitions, it'll look different every time, which will make it exciting to follow, but also keep opening the conversation, keep talking about it. And I donate that money, or like a third of that money, to my business to continue with the applications because those cost money. And it costs money to like create the work and have the time to create the work, to take the time out to take the work. Part of that goes to me making sure that I have food to eat. And then the other part goes to Legacies of War, which is a nonprofit in America. It advocates for the education, funding to remove bombs from America, and also survivor assistance in Laos. Then the other half of the money, because this is for the first 135 paintings, is that the other 135 I want to donate to a rehabilitation center in Laos called COPE. It's in Vientiane, which is the capital, also where my father is from. So I feel kind of close to it in that way. But they basically help on the ground with prosthetic arms, legs, just having a community to talk about what's happened, and physical therapy. I thought it would be good to balance both because it's both like a Lao and American issue. So those are two anchor points. The graphic novel, I'm hoping to find a nonprofit that speaks to the invisible problem of LGBTQ youth homelessness, which is really high in America. And I feel like we don't think about that when we think about homelessness, that people still are getting kicked out and they're like minors and they don't know where to go. So I hope that project anchors more to that. And then I also do market. I do small art market things where I like sell little prints and make community zines. And I'm trying out different ideas because I just like to keep a lot of things going on at once so that I don't get bored of one thing, or that it doesn't become too monotonous in one project where like I'm getting like, it's all starting to look the same. It's not exciting anymore. That's how I run my creative life. And yeah, all the business aspects of it are important for it to continue going. Because without it, then like, oh, suddenly there's no money to like apply to shows anymore. No one's seeing my work. Or suddenly I'm making a bunch of merch and there's nowhere to put it. So it's equally as important, but it's all work.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. I mean, those projects sound incredible. And it definitely sounds like you've intentionally diversified what you do. And you are always thinking about that practical aspect of needing to have time and food and shelter to be able to continue your creative endeavors. And that kind of diverse model will bring me actually to Simone, because you run Contessa Rock Hair, which is a hair salon, but it's so much more than that. You have kind of developed this mixed use model, right? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. Contessa Rock Hair is a hair salon. And we develop a model in which creativity in the hair fields and art fields kind of match together in one place. And the way we do that, we offer our space to local artists. We physically give them space to exhibit their own art. We've been running this program for a very long time, and that's actually how we got connected with Art on the Ave. It's been great since the very beginning, because we definitely believe creativity, it's at any age, at any social status. When you find creative people, it's think the right thing to do is to offer them as much visibility as possible. And that's what we do at Contessa Rock Hair, which also doing hair, it's part of the creative field in a way. That's how we combine the two together. Of course, running a hair salon, there is much more of just be creative. That's what we stand for. And we've been doing that for a very long time. The company is actually an Italian-based company, starting in the late 90s. We've been having great collaboration with artists since then. And then, of course, I am in New York City and I run the New York City branch. It's full of creative people. And it's been so fun since day one, which was 12 years ago when we opened in New York City. It's been so fun having all different kind of art. And some of them are actually here with me in my place. Actually, it was really fun. We do this as a non-for-profit project. So any artist is entitled to sell their own art. We do help with installation, we do help with the marketing, we do parties for the opening of the exhibition, for the closing of the exhibition, we do provide music or bands or any kind of needs for give them more visibility. But the sales is are all on the artist, meaning that the salon doesn't make any money out of it. As a return, we get to change the mood of the salon every couple of months. Every time we change the artwork, the salon looks completely different. That's what we really love. So the sales always been up to the artist, and we're very proud of it, because if we can help to generate their money to survive and to keep going on with their own creativity, we'll be happy to do that. Every time we have a different artist, I dedicate myself a lot into that. And each artist felt then it was right to give me one of their pieces of artwork they were exhibiting in the salon. So after 12 years, doing an art exhibition every 2-3 months, imagine how much artwork I have in my place. I'm very proud of it, and I'm very happy that I established very good and deep relationship with each one of the artists.
That's nice. You'll have to leave Art on the Ave at the end of July. You'll have to leave with a piece from us as well.
I was like heavily reminded from your setup of an opportunity I got when I was working at the National Museum of Women in the Arts. My boss is really also into community and helping artists and really focusing on marginalized voices. She's just a owner, or not the owner, but she's like the head person of the shop. But she's used her power to like bring in different muralists, change up the decor of the shop every now and then. And she's hosted at least 2 shows before the pandemic. One person got to have a photography show that was focused on the housing issue in DC. And then I also got a show where it was called Being, and I got to lead people to draw music together. So we created a playlist. She was really open to like catering from a Lao restaurant. There's not many, but we did do it. It was just a really wonderful intersectional way to bring in community, to support artists, and to make art a lot more approachable. Because I feel like in museums and galleries, sometimes people who are not in the art world will be a little more intimidated to go in because they're afraid they don't know something. But it's much more welcoming when it's like a retail space, because retail is a lot more familiar and it's a lot more like down to earth. So I really appreciate what you do. And I think that's just wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. And actually, how better than a hair salon can be than to give visibility to some in certain communities? How often people stop by to the hair salon, or not even like imagine a retail versus a hair salon, right? So a retail, you can pop in, pick something, buy, and then sure, you notice what's the inside. But in the hair salon, it's at least 45 minutes to 1 hour sitting. You definitely have somebody talking to you. Those 45 minutes. That's what we kind of offer to the artists, to have a connection right away through us in the community we are located in, and which is in the West Village in New York City. For the ones that you know don't know, New York City, it's actually the place where since the 50s and the 60s. Most of the artists lived in West Village, New York City, still a big community of artists. So there is a big appreciation for that. So we also connect with the LGBT community, which is, you know, it's very big in the West Village, Christopher Street. So all of this together, I think a hair salon, it's a really a place where people can communicate. And what we want to communicate, it's about art.
Thanks, Simone. And we're also, you were just mentioning Pride and I had it on my mind. It does feel like quite a big community in the West Village of artists and creatives and small local businesses that are coming together. We'll be part of the Pride Parade at the end of June. That'll be a fun weekend for everybody, I think, as well. These mixed-use models that you guys were just talking about, in my opinion, and tell me if I'm wrong, anybody, it creates a little bit more personality and individualism to the store or to the small business. And it kind of creates more buy-in from the community, I feel like. And that's something that going forward in New York, I think we'll see a lot more of, because it does create a little bit more of a community feel. What do you think?
Sure. I think it's all about that. And if we're talking about future for small businesses in big cities like New York City, it's a very tough future ahead. If anything, these collaborations, I think it's going to help anyone. So meaning small business will create more buzz around them. The artists will have more exposure. But the combination of the two, it will really make people like neighbors feel one more of this local mom and pop shop. Because what happens right now with the new economy in a big city like New York City, rents are going up. Cost of life is crazy. The small business owner being able to pay the rent, unless we're talking multinational companies. So I think these type of interactions, starting with the artists, going through interaction with the neighbors, local shopping weekends, this kind of thing, are really helping to reshape the structure of the city in the future.
Also, with the rents rising and the price of living becoming astronomical more than it was already, people will become a lot more intentional with their spaces and what they want to welcome, the type of energy and people they want in, and what they want to look like. Because no one wants to just be like another target, but smaller. I really agree with you in saying like it does add more personality. And I think customers can tell when a space cares about its community.
I agree. So talking about rising costs of rent and the challenges that come with being a small business owner or a creative or an artist in New York City, I want to turn to Jackie from Bank Lumi because you guys have a partnership with the Hebrew Free Loan Society that is specifically geared towards helping small businesses and entrepreneurs and creatives. So how might somebody like Kim or Simone who run smaller businesses benefit from that kind of an initiative?
Yeah. So through our corporate social responsibility efforts at Lumi, I mean, we've been a partner in supporting our communities for a very long time, especially over the past year. There's been so many challenges with COVID and even with Black Lives Matter bringing to the light a whole host of new longstanding issues in society. So we were really fortunate last year to be able to build a great program with the Hebrew Free Loan Society where we offer interest-free, no guarantor loans to small businesses, specifically with a focus on minority or women-owned businesses who are in need of financial support. And since launching that program, we've been able to provide $415,000 to support these entrepreneurs and businesses. These are small, creative, passionate, motivated business owners and entrepreneurs. They have a plan, but they're just looking for a boost of financial support to help get them to the next level and achieve their goals. And these businesses, they have like truly amazing stories. So we've had food vendors and restaurants and beauty salons and daycares and martial arts studios. They're really the heart and soul of these neighborhoods. And they really just need, for one reason or another, whether they were pivoting their business because of COVID, or for example, we had a martial arts studio who was such a pillar in their community. They had just expanded their space right before the pandemic hit, and they needed a little help to get over the hump. They knew that their clientele was going to come back, but they needed just a little boost to help get them there. So that's where Lumi can really come in and help these creatives, these small businesses with these interest-free, no guarantor loans, because we know that being able to find affordable financing, first of all, and then also the guarantor piece, especially for these smaller businesses, a lot of maybe like these creatives that are starting up that don't have like a lot of assets, the guarantor can be a really big obstacle. So being able to clear that obstacle for these folks is really what we're trying to do. We're trying to help in any way we can. It's a small thing, but being able to help the communities that way has been really rewarding so far.
Sounds like a wonderful program. Kim, would that be something that you've looked into, financing, grants, loans, things like that, in order to grow your business or your artistic career?
I haven't personally looked through anything like that before because I haven't thought bigger with money and things I want to do with projects yet, but it's definitely something that I would use probably in the future, at least think about.
It's definitely, I feel like once you start thinking of yourself as this is your career, it's maybe that next step of that kind of risk to take that will propel you a little bit. Looking at these kind of administrative pieces that come in when we are trying to form our own business, what do you think is the biggest administrative challenge? Simone, you run a business every day where you're doing retail, you're offering services, but you're also hosting events. And how do you navigate all of those different parts of your business?
Well, as I said, it's a combination of all of these together. If we talk about my daily routine, let's not talk about my daily routine. This is a bit crazy. But it's very enjoyable having a creative side. I am on the floor. I'm behind the chair 5 days a week. I only try to play with different hours that I used to do before starting the business, because you need to run the business. So you need hours over the week to do so. Challenges are so many, especially in a post-COVID era. But it's challenging, but it's also very rewarding, because the way that I started doing hair for just the pleasure of doing beautiful things on people. At one point, I realized then the next step, of course, there are so many next steps. The way that I want to see it, it was actually an expansion of the company in the United States, and that's how I ended up in New York. So for me, I really need to keep them both, because that's what I am, that's who I am, and that's how I see my future growing. That being said, of course, there are so many, as artists, there are so many different channels you can foreseeing your growth? Of course, hairstylists are mainly employed behind the chairs, but especially in New York City, there are so many different ways you can express your creativity as a hairstylist, talking about fashion, backstage of any kind, of course, editorials. There are a few things that you can combine just to your daily routine.
Thank you. And Kim, what's your biggest administrative challenge? Is it scheduling everything that you've got going on?
I think it might be. I think because I'm at a point where I still need a day job and that takes up my time. I have other things going on aside from my art life. It is probably making sure I actually have a block of time to do the tasks that I need to do. Because I also juggle art contract jobs. I'm working on another graphic novel with the API Domestic Violence Resource Project centering survivor stories. We've been doing a lot of like meetings and talking to people in support group kind of settings, basically creating the story and the character and everything that comes with it, alongside with me already doing my other projects. So I have a hard time not wanting to take more work because I like the excitement of it all. And especially if it's something I really believe in, I want to be a part of it and to help where I can. That's why deadlines are important.
Definitely. I think that's an issue for a lot of entrepreneurial people. Me from Art on the Ave, I do Art on the Ave, but I also have like three other full-time jobs. It's hard to say no when you're creative and excited and passionate about a lot of different things. Tom, you and I have discussed in the past that you've been in DC, but now you're going back to New York and you're moving your team back to New York, and you have to kind of entice them, convince them that New York is back in a sense. If it were me, I'd be looking at these kind of smaller businesses, community feel to do that. What are you doing?
I think it's a really pertinent question. Everybody in my industry, I work in the consultancy business. I help the banks primarily with sort of AI and data problems. My work, essentially, and all the work that's carried out by the people I interface with can be done remotely and is being done remotely, quite clearly. Nobody's in those buildings right now. When I go back to New York, when I say New York, I mean Manhattan, you know, I still see people, but those people that are living out in the burbs, I don't get to see them unless I drive out to the burbs now. My workforce, which is largely based in that area, have all got used to working somewhere else. The issue we're all going to have is when this bloody pandemic's finally over, we would hope to get quite a few people back into those offices as a result thereof, back into those small businesses, buying haircuts and everything else that they've got to buy. And I think what we've got to look at is we've got to make New York and cities of the world more interesting for people to come into now. There's clearly been a demonstration of an alternative life where we don't need to brave that ghastly commute. And the real question is what is it that makes it enjoyable for those people to come back in? Because that's really where the livelihood of all those businesses is going to come from. And of course, to your point, Jackie, and I'm amazed with what you're doing at Bank Leumi, supporting those types of businesses with unguaranteed loans and so on, which is critical. It's essential that those businesses can thrive in the long term. And I think seeing what you're doing, Simone, with your business, I think is that kind of creativity is exactly what will entice people back into the workplace. What do we come into the cities for at the end of the day? I live in Washington, D.C., and it's a great city to live in now. But what is it that makes New York and D.C. and cities like this a wonderful place to live? It's businesses like yours, to be honest with you. That's the reality of it. And I think gone are the days that businesses can just expect to have foot traffic just come in. There's got to be a competitive nature to it. And there's no question that art is at the center of everything that we do. And it's certainly what makes Manhattan such a wonderful place to be, is that creativity, that perpetual creativity that just pours out of the place. It's great what you're doing. And I think that's really what I need to help me as a business owner to get people to make that commute and to persuade people when I'm sort of talking to somebody about working in Manhattan versus working in, say, Raleigh, North Carolina. We need to make sure that there's something there. And I think for me, pitching to people, to my employees, those people that I want to hire, it's really being able to describe something that's special that they can't get in the places like Raleigh, not picking on Raleigh particularly. I think Raleigh's a great city, but it doesn't have the je ne sais quoi that we have in places like Manhattan, the special little studios like that. Or if it does, it has far less of them. And I think that's the thing that New York particularly can thrive on. It's important to all of us that this succeeds. You know, I mean, it's important to me because my business needs those people. It's important to the banks of the world who are investing in those small businesses. It's important to all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm the biggest proponent of New York, and I'm really the only one that's not going to be there anytime soon. But I will scream its praises far and wide. And last summer, when everyone was leaving New York and people were talking about how the city, not just Manhattan, but cities in general were dead because people are moving out of cities, I was just like, there's no way. Absolutely not. Because there is that je ne sais quoi of New York that makes it special. And it does come from small, creative, local people that live and die for the city, right?
Absolutely. Look at New York now and look at Manhattan now. The flower arrangements. I mean, you can't see them, Jackie, but for those of us who spend a lot of time there, I mean, they are magnificent. All this outdoor dining that's taken off. I used to sort of lament the fact that this country, I found there's three streets in America that have outdoor dining. Okay, there's Memphis, Tennessee. There was Stone Street, New York. And I can't actually remember the third one. But I found three in the whole of the country that allowed this sort of outdoor dining arrangement. And now everywhere in New York and DC and the major cities allows it. And with that has come this extraordinary creative experience with these amazing flower arrangements, which just adorn that outdoor seating arrangement. And if you haven't seen it, it's just fabulous. And I think that epitomizes the creative renaissance we're going through right now.
Yeah, and I enjoy seeing the way this really trying time has forced people to be quite inventive and creative and look more towards outdoor spaces and public spaces. Simone, you guys had during an Art on the Ave gallery walk, we had a band that was right outside your space and you had the windows open and it felt a very much a transient kind of space.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, it was one of the worst days of spring. So the weather was terrible. But that being said, a lot of people came and there was a nice following of the walk through the shops for the Art on Ave event. And that's actually also the beauty of this charming neighborhood that the city can offer, right? So when you have the community, people walk on the street, not just walk through the street. They actually walk on the streets, meaning they enjoy seeing new windows. They see what's going on the sidewalks. And now with the open restaurant program, there is much more of this. It's very interesting what Tom was saying. It's so true. Having a business in the West Village actually since 2008, it really allowed me to see how the city has changed over this past decade. I'm Italian, born and raised in Rome, and things in Rome, as you might know, they don't really change that fast, right? So in a decade in New York City, I was able to see so many things coming up, gone, happening again, new people, anything. In 10 years, a lot has changed, which is great. That's one of the personal reasons I came to New York City is to experience a lot all together in one place, right? But one thing that I was sad about in this change was actually seeing the biggest thing that was gone, it was the reason why people chose to come to New York City first. Meaning all the artists then were based in the West Village. A lot of them, they moved out to Philly because cheaper. Rent is cheaper and everything. So after 10 years of this happening, you realize, wait a minute, a lot of people were coming here because of that. And now that is not here anymore. And that's what Tom was saying. I mean, I just do hair and I'm very happy at what I do and how we do it. But I feel like the business like mine to really create or emphasize what's the truly spirit of certain city or neighborhood in the city. And then it's important that they stay alive, especially in this post-COVID era, in which what we really were afraid of during this time, it was to be with people. Our biggest problem was that we couldn't be with people. And I'm glad that my job, the nature of my job, kind of bring me with people every day. Because at the beginning, after 3 months that we were closed, at the beginning, I was afraid to be with people too. I truly believe that we can really help to rebuild through our simple routine, daily routine, nothing major. We can really help to rebuild what it was always, you know, part of the city, the community.
I like what you said there about the model of it's true, artists come in and tend to dictate where is the place that you want to be? And that was the West Village or different pockets in New York. And then artists tend to get priced out of those places because of gentrification and high rent. And so it is up to small businesses like yourself, but also very much larger organizations that can help maintain those communities for the people that built them, like artists, which is why initiatives like Bank Lumi's are so important to kind of sustain the communities in New York that we care so much about.
I have a question actually about Bank Lumi. Is that in any way related to federal funds or any of that kind, or it's completely private funds?
Yeah, so it's private funds, just like any regular bank, but we were able to help a lot of businesses last year to gain access to the federal funds. You may remember the Paycheck Protection Program as part of the CARES Act. So we spent many, many hours helping not only our clients, but members of the community and partners being able to access those funds, because it was a huge lifeline for people, but it was also really not that easy for people to be able to gain access to it, which was a huge reason why we decided to launch this program with the Hebrew Free Loan Society, because even though there was billions of dollars available to small businesses that were ultimately ended up being forgivable loans, there were still so many people that weren't able to access it. The PPP Paycheck Protection Program, I think, has now ended, but we're still trying to help make that difference through these loans. And we also have just our Lumi employees who just are volunteering their time to help small businesses if they do have questions, if they don't really know how to navigate accessing these types of loans, if they have other questions about whether they need help with like their marketing or even technology or legal advice, if they're putting together a website. We have like all of that expertise, and our volunteers are happy to help both borrowers with the Hebrew Free Loan Society, but also any small businesses in the community that need help.
Thank you. In name of a lot of small business owners to do that. It was tough. It was really tough during COVID. And me, myself, I was really getting any help I could get. And I didn't know about you, otherwise for sure we'll have collaborated. I think a big thank you from all the small business owner community.
Simone, I was in a restaurant yesterday and I saw for the first time that they were charging a 5% surcharge as a COVID recuperation plan. So, you know, you should just think about adding, I think every business, to be honest with you, that was impacted like yours should, without question, able to request something as small as that. You know, we all need you. It's a cruel world that we went through that separated us so distinctly. You know, businesses like ours were able to carry on functioning while businesses like yours were completely shut down. What we need to do now is to ensure that the best thrive. And I think this is the key. You know, government handouts are great up until a point, but they don't necessarily allow natural selection to exist. What's happening now is the greatest economic expansion the planet's ever gone through. We printed more money, there's been more easing of wealth in the last 12 months than ever before. The net impact to business like yours should be very, very, very positive. It's not going to all be at once, inevitably. And I mean, down here in Washington, where I am in Georgetown, you know, this place has been heaving for months. You wouldn't know we'd been in a pandemic. And then I drive up to New York, it's still recovering. But I can assure you, seeing what I'm seeing here and seeing what I've seen in other parts of the US, that when it comes back so fast. There's no clothes in the stores. I was in J. Crew the other day. There's absolutely nothing there. People are just buying whatever limited stock there is. The restaurants are all having to take items off the menu because they're just overwhelmed. So just expect things to ramp up, plan for it, and enjoy it because it's well-deserved and well-earned.
I do hope that's the case. I'll be waiting for it to ramp up here in the north.
I was always sure that businesses would come back too, because these are human beings that still have thoughts and dreams and energy. They're not going to suddenly stop their entire livelihood, all they've known, because they were hit. Just from talking about, oh, the artist creates like more individuality for the store and community, and then the outdoor seating creates this like experience of community that's different. That I think the world was cruel before the pandemic, and it's just been accentuated through the pandemic. The disparities have been more obvious, and that will push people to come together. I was thinking about Jackie talking about the different loans and how there's like money there, but it's not accessible. I also work for a group called Welcome to Chinatown, who's thought a lot about that and taken it into their own hands to create grassroots funding to help small businesses. Because there's also like language barriers, you know, there's people who might not have access to the internet. There are all these business owners with different like techniques with how they've kept their business going. And I think seeing this all happen so tragically quick has pushed people to really like think about what they're spending their time on and what they want to exist still. Going to the tipping thing too. Like, I'm always willing to pay the extra money because people are risking their life to do this job for you. And it might be like just scooping ice cream, but you know, it brought joy to my day and you deserve to be paid like we're in a pandemic.
I love that sentiment. You guys, we are kind of rounding out our time for today. So if I can just go around and ask each of you, just in a few words, what do you see or how do you see the future for local businesses and creators in New York? Kim?
I feel like I just spoke about that. I mean, I'll go back to it. I see the future as people coming back, people working together more to create different solutions to accessible tools and resources for these dreamers. I don't foresee us just accepting big business taking over everything because I don't think that's natural. And people crave that human contact, that personal touch to the experiences they have in their day. I just see it bustling again and being not like it was before. I think it's going to be a lot more thoughtful of just like who has access to what.
Hopefully. I'm going clockwise. So Tom.
It's a really good question. I agree with Kim, obviously. The reality is this, guys, that big businesses like the banks that I service are largely leaving New York. They will, of course, always have a presence there, but they've been doing it for years. They've been moving work to other geographic locations. Offshore was one, and then nearshore sort of, ironically, that followed offshore. That's not going to change, and the pandemic is going to accelerate a large sort of part of that. I know as a fact, because I'm talking to many of these institutions and I know their plans, something will replace those big businesses. And I hope, and I'm pretty convinced and generally, you know, have a high degree of confidence that what that will be more interesting businesses. Dare I say it? Sorry, Bank Lumi, you know, you're a great bank. Having more creative type industries coming in, technology and so on, which has been the large industry that's moved into Manhattan over the last 10, 15 years, and largely filled a lot of that space that has been vacated by the traditional occupiers. I think that's going to shift, and I think there's going to be a change. I think small businesses and the service industry obviously need to compete ferociously for the business that's there. And obviously, mankind needs you. More than ever, and desperately desires restaurants to go out in and good hairdressers. I spent a lot of my life looking for good ones. I'm looking forward to coming in and finding you guys. That's what's important to all of us, is finding that little bit of extra that you're going to get in a place like Manhattan that you just don't get out in the sticks, in the strip malls. The one thing that America's so great for is the fact that it's able to create this wonderfully uniform society. Manhattan doesn't conform to any of that. It's completely unique. I think that's what will always attract people to it.
Thank you. On to you, Jackie.
Yeah, I mean, New York has always been resilient. It's been knocked down a bunch of times over the years, and we've seen it come back bigger and better. And it's definitely the small businesses, the creatives, the passion of the people that really are what drives New York City. And the small businesses, the artists, the hair salon, Simone, like you all are like really the cornerstone of these communities. And I think you have the power to bring us all together and to reinvigorate our neighborhoods. And I think we're already seeing that just from what we're talking about today. I'm personally so excited to see what comes of this, the outdoor dining, the al fresco, the artwork that's going to come from all of this. If Bank Lumi is here to help a little bit with our small part that we're able to do, we're happy to be there. But I know that by helping the small businesses and the creators, we're here to help the heart and soul of the community that truly is New York. I cut my own hair throughout the pandemic, so I got to come find you as well, Simone. I'm due.
Well, you guys are all welcome to come in. I'm actually expecting you to all come in whenever you have a chance.
I'll be there. Simone, what about you?
How I see the future. So I've been in New York City throughout all the pandemic. I was shocked at the beginning because first time ever that I have seen a city like this empty. I don't know actually what I was thinking, because it was a big shock, beside all the unknown of the virus and everything. But in terms of city and doing business in the city, I was really scary because I didn't know what to expect. The city that I knew at that time, it never really left anyone behind. So it was always hot pace and work, be productive. Right now, it seems that everything's coming back, finally. From that point of emptiness, I truly believe that the city is starting recovering from that point. The future could only be brighter. As Tom was saying, Manhattan is definitely very special. It doesn't conform to any of what it's really American. It's one of the biggest city, international city, than that the United States can offer. And because of that, it will be always diverse in creativity, diverse in what it has to offer, especially small businesses. That's what really creates the entity of Manhattan, small businesses and community like artists or any type of minority that in here are majorities.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you guys for all of your wonderful insights. Before we sign off, I'm going to go around again. Can you just tell us how we can connect with you, whether that's online or an email or something like that? Kim, what's the best way to reach you or see what you're up to?
I have a website. It's www.kimsandara.com. Or you can reach me on Instagram at KimTheDiamond. I update the Instagram more, but everything will be nicely laid out on the website too.
Perfect. Simone?
As everyone in the hair industry, Instagram and the website can be our main windows to reach us out and check out our works. The website is contestarockhair.com and Instagram is NYC_contestarockhair. So, and looking forward to see all of you guys in our chairs for amazing haircuts.
Perfect. And Tom, how best can we find out what Prospect 33 is up to?
Probably LinkedIn is the best place to find me and the company. The website's www.prospect33.com. We're doing a huge amount of work in the AI space, so anybody's interested in that, that's really sort of the big push for me right now and a large part of where I'm spending my time. But info@prospect33.com is probably the best email to reach out to for those of you who are looking for information on our business.
Perfect. Thank you. And as usual, we are artontheavnyc.com and artontheavnyc on Instagram and Facebook. Final words, I just want to say thank you so much to Prospect 33 and Bank Lumi for all of their support and for making this Art on the Ave exhibition possible. To reach Bank Lumi, you can go to lumiusa.com, that's LEUMI, or search them on LinkedIn at Bank Lumi USA. Thank you.
Produced by Mouth Media Network and made possible through the generosity of Bank Lumi and Prospect 33.